After the silently glaring young Purchase had been placed, securely shackled at ankles and chained at wrists, into his specially appointed carriage, Quito found the bile subsiding in his stomach. After all, he had prevailed, and the chattel was his. Perhaps it was just as well that the stupid man had bid against him, because it had given him a chance to prove that such opposition was hopeless. Such reminders were in order periodically. The wind out here on the open road blew fresh, carrying tree smells and grass odors. The stars shone down, twinkling. Quito smiled, as best he could, thinking of Master, of good red juice, and of what lay in store for his Purchase. A healthy, spirited virgin, that was the very best kind to degrade, because there was much more reaction for the effort. Master would be very pleased.
Hold there!
What was this? Three men. Highwaymen? Yes. All had bandanas round their faces. How did they dare? Then, by the light of the stars, he recognized the big, broad-shouldered bidder at the mart and the two who had been with him. Obviously some amateur going into business for himself. The fool.
I represent someone of great importance. If it's gold you want, I have little left after the mart.
It's not gold we're after. It's the girl.
My master.
Damn your master!
Quito watched as the two stockle-capped young men sheathed swords, dismounted, and threw open the door to the carriage compartment.
Cal!
Brother Wart! She's shackled!
Key, dwarf.
Quito knew better than to argue. These were rough men showing little caution. Anyone who would waylay a carriage of the master would hardly hesitate to slay the master's underling. He tossed the big man the key ring, who caught it and quickly transferred it to the slighter built of the thieves. They released the girl. Then the big man cut the harness on the carriage's horse. A moment later, they were gone, one horse carrying double. Quito was alone on a lonely road with an empty carriage. They hadn't even had the decency to steal his animal, but instead had left it for him to catch, or to try to catch.
Damn! Master isn't going to like this! Master isn't going to like this at all!
Well away from the carriage, they slowed to a walk so that the double-loaded horse would not be unduly fatigued. Kelvin, riding with John behind him, introduced her to his new friends, the father and son team of Morvin and Les Crumb.
They are members of the Raiders. They oppose the Queen and her evil policies, but they have to operate in secret or the Queen's guards will wipe them all out.
What about Helm? You bought her, didn't you?
How could we fail after you signaled so strongly? Then, when she took off her cap and we saw she was around here, we understood. That had the incidental effect of ruining her value. The auctioneer was furious.
We had to hurry down with the money. Otherwise, we knew she'd be severely beaten.
Then where is she now?
She was very tired. I think she'd been sick. She said something about eating dragonberries and how glad she was to see me. And then she just, well, slept. So Moore carried her to his horse and took her out to a hideout cabin he has in the wilderness and got a girl to tend her. And that's where we're going now. How did you find her? Where did she come from? Why did she seem to know me?
John explained about her discovery and removal to the girl mart and how she had picked Helm Flambeau for company because of her round ears.
I knew right then she was the perfect match for you, Kel.
Then she told of what she had learned about the dragonberries she had saved, and how Helen had tried to commit suicide with them.
Suicide? Why?
She'd been raped, Kel. She's a delicate girl, always treated well before. When that happened, she just wanted to die. I told her it wouldn't make any difference to you.
Of course it makes a difference. Who did it? We have to kill!
I mean, the way you feel about her.
But I don't even know her.
You must have seen her ears and her body. But what more do you need to know?
Of course it wouldn't make any if I...
Just make sure you tell her that. She likes you, Kel.
But she never saw me before.
She saw you. The berries didn't kill her. They only sent her into a trance. And her spirit left her body and traveled around. And she saw you. She liked your ears, of course. There couldn't have been any other reason, could there?
She traveled astrally? I thought that ability was lost centuries ago.
We think maybe it was her ears. That maybe the berries killed the folks of Rudd, but only stunned those with earth blood, so the spirits can travel for a while. Maybe if Kel ate some of those berries.
No. He's the hero of the prophecy. We can't risk him on poisoned berries.
I told Helen she could be very useful, because she can travel anywhere, see and hear anything. That's why I signaled you to buy her.
You did well, girl. The raiders can really use a talent like that. We can spy on the guardsmen, on the queen herself.
But if the berries are poison...
We'll have to find out what the minimum number is she can take that will let her spirit travel without harming her. Obviously, the effort takes a lot out of her, so we won't overdo it, but what a tool!
Kelvin could see the point, but remained troubled. He didn't like thinking of a beautiful girl like Helen Flambeau as a tool. They reached the cabin in due course. Helen Flambeau was up, having recovered from her fatigue. By the wan, flickering light of a lone candle, Kelvin saw her face, round ears and all. She had brushed out her black hair, and now it shone beside the candle, and her half-shadowed face was lovely. She had been bedraggled, and then unconscious before, not presenting her best aspect. Now, animate, she was beautiful. John nudged him.
I am beautiful.
You jackass.
Helen approached gracefully.
I'd like to be your friend, Kelvin. Did your sister tell you...
No difference.
About the experience I had with the dragonberries?
I did.
I saw you with the gauntlet. I realize you are a hero, but if there is any way, I can help.
I'm no...
You sure can. We need information on the whereabouts and activities of the Queen's guardsmen. If you can spy on them without their knowing...
I think I could... But I would need more berries, and I don't think I could do it too often because it really took the strength from me that one time.
You actually saw me and heard me?
Oh, yes. Of course, it was all rather confused because you weren't explaining anything. You were just going somewhere, but everyone was saying you were a hero and something about a prophecy, and I couldn't stay long. I never did this before. I mean, going about in astral form, and I suppose I'm not very good at it.
I'm not very good at being a hero.
I think we have a lot in common.
Round ears?
Well, that too.
For some unaccountable reason, Kelvin felt himself blushing again. He hoped the dim light masked it.
We'd better bunk down here. We're going to be busy the next few days. You two girls better take the bed, and the rest of us will lie on the floor.
They settled in. Kelvin was tired, but also buoyed by the rescue of his sister and by the discovery of Helen Flambeau. He had never dreamed of meeting a round-ear girl, let alone a beautiful one, his own age. And she liked him. It was almost too good to be true. Morvencrumb's face got very dark, his heavy eyebrows knitting together like dark caterpillars. He stared at the bedraggled farmer and the pinch-faced woman Kelvin guessed to be the man's wife.
Say that again, Jeffreys.
They burned my barn, ransacked my house, carried away everything they wanted, and smashed and destroyed the rest. We watched them from the woods.
Damn, and I suppose that's just the start.
Must be. I heard one of them say they would hit Al Reston next. You know what it's about, Morvan?
Revenge.
I smell smoke.
That would be Gaston Hayes. Looks as if they're trying to get us all of us with the raiders.
Sir... If it's all because of me, because of what happened in the park, if it is, sir, perhaps I should,
It had to come, youngster. Prophecy or none, slain bullies or no. We planted right, and now we reap the expected crop.
They won't have killed many. The raiders were expecting it. Most have been setting watches every night for weeks, and every time there's trouble in the park, everyone sets a watch.
It's an excuse to play cards and read books late at night. Few will be taken by surprise.
Fewer yet, if I have my way.
Kelvin knew Morvan was thinking of Helen, who remained back at the cabin. Obviously, astral spying could do a lot to help them oppose raids like this, if they could learn exactly where and when each raid was planned.
We will round up those who have suffered. Then we disband Crumb's raiders. What we have now we'll call knights. That's appropriate, isn't it? Kelvin, Knight Hackleberry Knights. Knights of the Round Ear.
What does he mean, Kel?
John was back in boy guise, feeling most comfortable that way, especially after what had almost happened in the boy mart.
Quiet!
We'll have to hide out for now. But when we can, we'll gather men and arms, and then, come good or come evil, we'll fight. This time to win.
What will you use for money?
What we have. What we can scrape up. If only we had some gold. Say, half a dragon's worth.
I know where we can get gold.
That's so?
My sister's just a child.
Let her speak, Hackleberry.
Our dragon. The one Kelvin slew.
He slew a dragon?
Yeah, with a tent pole, right through the eye socket and into the old brain pan. That's where I found the dragonberries.
Gods! And here he pretended to be afeard of a couple of mere guardsmen.
Well, we packed out the gold, but Cheeky Jack's got it. He's the bandit who kidnapped me for the auction. I heard his name when...
Impressed you for the auction. They don't call it kidnapping, because there's supposed to be a law against that. You wouldn't know where old Cheeky is hiding, would you, youngster?
You bet I would.
Kelvin cringed. He knew that more heroic business was coming up. They saw Mockery grazing behind the lean-to shack from the rim of a canyon nearly a quarter of a mile away. Morvan suggested an arrow to stop the equine's mouth, but John quickly protested, and Kelvin hastily explained that the donkey was deaf as a stone and unlikely to sound an alarm.
In that case, we'll slip down that steep bank behind those trees and come in from the southeast.
Jack will be home. That's his horse.
Well, that one could make a bit of noise if we don't come in just right. Any ideas?
Well, my idea is that he won't. Donkeys are the ones that make commotions. Horses can be passed.
Then let's pass. Son, you got that gauntlet on right?
I think so, sir.
Good, because I'll let you do the killing. You need the experience.
Kelvin swallowed in private agony. He had known that this was part of what leadership entailed. If there was one thing he did not want to experience, it was killing. Not even villains who would steal gold and sell his sister for a plantation hand.
All right, go.
After a downhill run, a careful descent, and a cautious walk, there was a silent crawl. They were almost to the black horse when Jack emerged from the shack and saw them.
Well! Take him, Hackleberry!
Kelvin found himself on his feet, good sword in right hand, gauntlet on left.
Baby boy's brother! Come to get his head split!
Get him, Kel!
Kelvin trembled, though he knew how this should end. Magic was, after all, magic, and a fight in the park had convinced him that the gauntlet was that. If only it was for the proper hand.
You fight with a bare sword hand, sonny. What's the mitten for? You gonna use it to wipe something? Your nose, maybe? Perhaps your blood?
I'm ready, mister.
Oh, yeah? Well, in that case...
The sword darted like a striking serpent, to be caught and flung away with one lightning move on the part of the gauntlet.
What? Wait!
Kelvin raised the tip of his sword to the highwayman's throat.
If you have anything to say, say it fast.
I didn't mean... I only wanted...
Ah, don't kill him!
It was a large, slovenly woman standing in the doorway of the cabin.
Watch her, men.
Kelvin realized that this was the man's wife. Could he kill a man with a wife and maybe a child? Even such a man as this? After all... Cheeky Jack hadn't really hurt Kelvin or John. He had just taken their gold and sold John to the boy mart. All that evil was now being undone.
You're sorry, aren't you? And you won't do it again!
I never saw anything like that move. You just grabbed my blade right out of my hand! You must be.
You better believe it.
The highwayman raised his hands, eyes now on the gauntlet.
Oh, that hardly seems fair. Magic?
You prate of fair? You who attack nearly unarmed and unskilled boys? You who prey on them with no other object than enriching yourself? You who prey on the weak without a sign of conscience?
Well, kill me then! Kill me and get it over with!
Kill him, youngster!
Kill him, Kel!
Yes, strike!
Kelvin closed his eyes, bunched his muscles, and tried to will the deed. But Jack, trembling there with his bare arms raised, was now just as helpless as anyone he had ever slain. Villain he might be, but now he was helpless before a sword, and to strike now would make Kelvin feel like a murderer.
Murderer!
Shut up! Another word, woman, and...
Kelvin could imagine the gesture Moore must have made.
Go on! I swear I won't do it this time. You've got to do it for yourself.
Abruptly, he lowered the sword point.
I give him his life.
What? Huckleberry, may I ask why?
Because he's only a man. Only a highwayman. Only one bandit.
What? Are you daft?
Only one highwayman. But there are others, many others, as your son has told me.
What are you blethering about?
He can spread the word, he and his wife, about us. What we did today. We won't allow boys to be pressed any longer, or girls. We won't allow anyone to rob or to steal and to kill as he has done.
We'll do it! We'll do it!
Huckleberry, I do believe you make a little sense. Let him spread the word to his friends, and if he's up to his villainy again, we disarm him and we gut him.
Right, sir.
God, but I believe you'll make a leader yet. Me, I'd never have thought of that.
But I can't even try it without more dragonberries. We lost the rest of them at the Girl Mart. I'm willing to try, if we can get the berries.
Kelvin had hoped Helen wouldn't be willing, but he couldn't say that. What would he do if she ate the berries again, and this time they poisoned her? Maybe it had been a fluke before.
Well, then we'll just have to fetch more berries. Actually, we'll need the rest of the scales from that dead dragon, just to be sure we have enough gold. John tells me you only got them from the top side of the beast, the easiest place to reach.
Damn his big-mouthed little sister. Now they would have to go back to the dragon, and Kelvin didn't like the notion of bracing even a dead dragon.
We'll take a full crew, so we have the manpower to turn the critter over. We'll get them all this time, to be sure, and John will get a whole basket full of the berries at the same time.
Yeah!
I should come along.
No!
But why not, Kelvin? The berries are for me.
I don't want you in dragon country. There could be another dragon.
Well, yes, but...
Gods, Helen, the thought of anything happening to you...
Then you do care for me.
Of course I...
He's right, Flambeau. Dragon country is no place for women.
Now, just a minute, I'm...
Or children.
Now, I won't let you exclude me. I found those berries, and I know where they are.
Right. I said you're coming. Let's get on with it.
John jumped for joy. Then she paused.
But what does that make me? Well, if not a woman or a child.
A knight.
Oh, yes!
Please be careful, hero. I don't know what I'd do without you.
Kelvin felt himself blushing yet again. Why was he so helpless in her presence?
Yeah.
There were 30 of them now, all the farmers and townsmen who had called themselves Crumb's Raiders and now called themselves Knights of the Round Ear. Dressed in their brown berry shirts, green briar pantaloons, and lightweight summer stuckle caps, they looked like anything but an army. Smelling of natural fertilizing agents, they didn't even have the aroma of an army, Kelvin thought as he rode along with the Crumbs, more and less, and with John sharing his big bay mare. What an outfit, and what a mission. They were going back to Dragon Country to find the rotting carcass and get all the scales and all the berries.
You say it's along this bank?
Kelvin nodded. They should be seeing Boswell soon, he thought, looking at the overcast sky for the dark scavenger birds. Normally, Boswells were said to be an ill omen.
There!
Les pointed in the distance. At the same time, the stench of the rotting carcass reached them on the breeze. Kelvin felt his nose wrinkle and his stomach lurch. Somehow, the odor made him feel even less like a hero or leader. He had no nose and no stomach for it.
Yep, that's dragon stink.
I wonder. The Boswells aren't landing. They're just hovering in the sky.
Who cares? Body's there. There's still scale to gather. That's what counts.
There was another dragon. We saw its tracks. It looked as though they fought.
Or mated.
Much the same thing with dragons.
More and less had come to the same conclusion he had, that the two dragons had probably been mating. Did that mean that the other would return to this vicinity? Farm animals, he knew, could require several matings before it took, and it could be the same with dragons. What would happen if the female came back and found men crawling over the corpse of her mate? The thought made him shudder, but no one else seemed concerned. Were they fools, or was he a coward? Somehow, he didn't really like either alternative. As they rounded the river bend, the word went back and forth from man to man, and soon all were craning their necks, reddened or dark-tanned, as the case might be, as they strained to see the sight. Soon, everyone who had been behind moved up front, leaving the Hackleberries and the Crumbs and Keith Sanders, the rabble-rouser from the park, and burly, graying Gaston Hayes. Kelvin felt himself frowning. Something wasn't exactly right, but he couldn't quite pin it down.
What is it, bold brother mine?
The scales. They were scattered about like petals from flowers. I just had a glimpse, but we didn't leave them like that. We loaded all we could onto Mockery and stacked the rest neatly near the body. Wasn't that so, John?
Yeah.
The other dragon. It's been here, feeding.
You sure?
The scales have been moved.
Maybe Jack?
He didn't know where the dragon was.
He could have spelled it.
Well, then why would he scatter the scales instead of taking them? Dad, I think...
Suddenly, a very live dragon's snout had appeared over the side of the dead one. Blood-stained jaws gaped. Gobbets of spoiling flesh hung on the terrible teeth. The thing rose up on its front legs. Its blood-red eyes seemed to fasten on them instantly.
Gods!
Run for your lives!
It was Keith Sanders. It seemed that the man was just as proficient at urging rabble to flee as urging it to fight.
No! Stand and fight!
The dragon came charging hard. Men and horses scattered. The tail lashed like a big, thick, rawhide whip, knocking down horses and flinging off riders. Blood and other bodily substances stained nearby rocks and trees and roadway.
No! We've got to stand! United, organized, disciplined!
Les was, of course, correct, and his military training helped him. But his words had all the effect of the proverbial cry down a dry well. In that moment, Kelvin realized that most men were just as cowardly as he knew himself to be. The difference between them was that he anticipated the things he feared, while others ignored them until it was too late. That didn't make him feel much better, but he did think his way was less foolish. Gaston Hayes brushed back gray hair from his face and raised his ancient crossbow. He aimed into the dust of the dragon's activity, his rheumy eyes squinting, and he squeezed the trigger. It had not even struck a dragon scale, but had lodged in a tree instead.
Damn you for cowards!
Moore kneed his big plow horse out to meet the dragon. The lance lowered, aimed roughly at the creature's head. The whites of the horse's eyes showed, but he leaped a plow horse's ungainly leap at his master's urging. The dragon, who had been coming fast, wriggling almost comically from side to side, now put on its brakes. Its front feet locked and skidded, its broad tail swished as it swung around and down hard. Crumb, big man that he was, went spinning like a child's tantrum-tossed toy.
Help him! If we go in fast, maybe we can save him!
Yeah!
Looking at his sister's eager young face, Kelvin did what he felt he had to and pushed John off their horse.
What are you doing?
Kelvin and Lester charged at the side of the dragon. Just as they reached it, its enormous head snapped around. Les delivered a quick, slapping sword blow to the snout, the monster's eyes being far out of reach. The creature's great clawed forefoot rose and swept him almost casually from his mount. Kelvin felt his gauntlet pull the horse's reins. The animal responded by halting abruptly. Kelvin saved himself from going over the horse's head by a sudden grab at the bay's tossing mane. His sword slipped from his fingers. Desperately, he tried shifting his weight to keep his seat. Morvan was up now, shaking his big head. He looked for the lance. Kelvin found it, or rather his left hand did. The gauntlet wrenched his shoulder, reaching he knew not for what. He saw the ground come up at him, and he had to fling out both hands to avoid striking his head. Clouds of choking gray road dust rose around him. His left hand fought him, finally closing on a smooth shaft. Kelvin forced himself to his feet, the shaft of the lance smooth in his right hand and gripped clumsily and higher up by his left. He felt dizzy because of the dust. He could see neither horse nor dragon. terrible sword-like teeth flashed directly overhead. Hot and carrion-scented air blew sickeningly into his face. He felt the shaft driven into the ground. His left arm remained steady as he tried but failed to retain his balance. Dust swirled, stench overpowered, saliva and blood dripped down on his face. The ground shook, heaved, and rocked. Barely conscious, Kelvin saw figures emerge from the settling dust. More and less Crumb came to stand over him, John coming up behind, looking as if she were crying.
You did it again, son! Look, lad!
Kelvin struggled to his elbow. He was lying, he discovered, in a messy bubble of thick, sticky, steaming dragon blood. While above him, staring with a single fading eye held upright by the lance that impaled its mate and entered the hidden recesses behind the socket, swayed the dead, nightmarish head of the once unconquerable dragon.
So this is the kingdom of Thrud.
Kelvin sniffed the spicy smell of ore lemon cakes that reached them from the beehive-shaped ovens. It was as hilly as Rudd, but the trees and the crops were different, the trees running much to citrus.
Good enough for me.
John wiped some limb fruit juice from her mouth, licked the rind, and then tossed the rind at a wolf fox's pointed face. The wolf fox promptly disappeared into the thicket of Hasbert brush.
You've got some treats in store. I was here for nearly a month once. Prettiest girls in the Seven Kingdoms.
Girls? Phooey!
Little sister, Kelvin thought, would soon enough be changing her attitude when she got into a situation where boys behaved decently toward her. Of course, they always had behaved well toward certain girls. He wondered what Maybelle Winterjohn, the prettiest and freckledest girl in school, had done since he left. If things had been different, but there had been no choice. But of course she would never have been interested in a round ear.
A Rudna for your thoughts.
Kelvin hadn't seen Helm right up beside John.
Why do you feel you have to blush every time the subject of women comes up?
Helm, of course, was not turned off by round ears. That made her so obviously the girl for him that he wondered why he was unable to believe it. He blushed harder.
I was only teasing you, Kel. I know it's hard for you to adjust to being a hero, just the way it's hard for me to live with the fact that I got...
No difference.
I think that's what I like about you, besides your burning red round ears, that you represent no threat to me. You aren't like those beasts. You wouldn't ever...
Never!
Because I guess you know that it's likely to be a long time before I can... That is... You know...
And probably just as long a time for him. She had drawn a nice analogy between his supposed heroism and her degradation. Both of them had had to do things for which they had been totally unprepared, and it remained difficult to adjust to the new realities. They were indeed well-matched, in devious as well as the obvious ways.
Say,
quiet!
I hope I never get like that.
I hope she does.
She's ready now. When she meets the right boy.
But never!
The road ran downhill past a stone cairn dedicated to the memory of Thrud's soldiery who had perished in the 200-year-old war with Rudd. It was discomforting to imagine the shades of those soldiers out there on the grass in front of the cairn. What would they think, Kelvin mused, of the two Crumbs and two Heckleberries and one Flambeau come to their homeland for mercenaries to fight in a war that hadn't happened yet? Probably they would approve. After all, soldiers were soldiers. How many had ever fought in the name of a cause so noble or for pay so magnificent? Yet... Yes, they would have to approve. Lester looked over at him, and then at his father. Kelvin knew what the latter was thinking. They should have taken more men. With Mockery and the one pack horse loaded with scale, they could be in danger from highwaymen. But Thrud, for some strange reason, was far more law-abiding than its neighboring kingdoms, especially Rug. The big man dismounted and crossed the road to a rough wooden fence. He crossed the fence into a field filled with trellises supporting large yellow clusters of curupes. He spoke briefly to the farmer, dressed in creaseless brown skins, paid him a full scale, and came back with his arms loaded. Kelvin took the fruit, handed to him, and popped and squirted the sweet tart ovoids into his mouth.
Paradise. Paradise.
The most luscious fruit growing anywhere in the Seven Kingdoms, and yet the boys of Thrud took up soldiering for the highest bidders in other lands. Strange. But then maybe Rud would look like paradise to someone who didn't know.
Recruitment house ahead. We'll order our men and supplies, show that we've got gold to pay for them, and then head back.
By way of the floor. Visitors have to see the floor while they're in Thrud. Wouldn't be right if they didn't.
They rode on to the large, unadorned structure that was not unlike a barracks.
I do hope Captain McKay will be here as agreed. He's supposed to have the men, experienced warriors and experienced officers, ready for us. But there's a saying that Thrud mercenaries, though reliable, do get into scrapes. I remember last time I was here, back in the big conflict, when a third of the men were unavailable. Seems some of them had started a mercenaries union to fix rates. Some liked the idea and some didn't. So, add to the other reasons we lost and the Queen won, the fact that we didn't get the right men.
They entered the door of a recruitment house and stood looking around at the scant furnishings and the dozen or so men. No one spoke for a moment, and then the big gray-haired man with one arm stood up from his table in the corner. He held out his hand, gray eyes meeting Morvin's blue.
Morvin Crumb, I'm Captain McKay. Welcome to Recruitment House in the Kingdom of Thrud.
Morvin merely glanced at the empty sleeve. Good officers, after all, were traditionally warriors who had lost something in a fight.
You know why we've come. This here is the Round Ear. Kelvin, take off your cap.
Hesitantly, Kelvin reached up and pulled the head covering off his straw-colored hair.
Glad to meet you, Round Ear.
I'm not certain I'm the right Round Ear, but I do have this gauntlet I found, and it's evidently the one of prophecy. With it on, I can't lose in a sword fight.
And the gauntlet great shall the tyrant take, the magician bared by the gauntlet head. Yes, one of the interesting prophecies, clumsy as their wording tends to be. Don't worry about whether you're the one or not, son. As long as you've got the gauntlet and people think you're the one, it helps. What really counts, of course, is something else. Military tactics and the men trained to carry them out. How are you on the tactics? Don't worry, you'll learn. And you'll have good officers, I'll see to that. Well, sit down and we'll make our plans.
Kelvin took the proffered chair, as did the rest of the party. It seemed to him that though he was supposed to be the hero of the prophecy, he did little but let others move him around. Still, it was sensible to sit here in this quiet place and make plans. That was true, even if he had little to do with making them.
We brought scale to get things started. We'll need everything. Swords, lances, shields, body armor, war horses, the works.
I understand. You come to the right place. But the terms...
When we win, each man gets a choice of citizenship and land or a mercenary's top wages plus bonus.
And if the fighting lasts and the men need gold to send to their families?
More scale. There are more dragons where the last two came from.
Last two? You went on a hunting expedition in Dragon Country?
Aye, we did that. But I've got to tell you, this Round Ear here slew both of them.
You don't look like a warrior.
I'm not. But the prophecy and the gauntlet, they made the difference.
Tell me how.
When John, my younger sibling here, and I arrived in Dragon Country the first time, we were all on our own. Just John and me and the deaf donkey outside. I had a sword, but it was an old sword. John's the best with a sling of anyone I've seen. When John saw the dragon, John thought it dead, and...
On and on with the familiar tale. Captain McKay listened intently. His eyes turned to fix on John, and it was evident that he understood her nature quickly enough, but he gave no overt indication. He was the kind of soldier who could keep a secret. Silently, he motioned to the grizzled officers drinking at the other tables. They rose and came across the room. All stood listening raptly, now and then one or another breaking his silence with a brief and appropriate curse.
And I never even knew until I regained consciousness. There he was, skewered right through the eye, just as the first had been skewered by the tent pole.
Wizard's teeth!
The speaker was a bearded man with one ear missing and an ugly scar across his cheek.
That was some adventure. You're either the round ear of prophecy or the luckiest round ear in any of the Seven Kingdoms.
Yes, I guess that's so. But I don't feel special. And without the gauntlet...
You'll do just fine until another contender comes along. Personally, I don't think anyone could be that lucky. It has to be the prophecy.
I agree with you. He just doesn't realize what he is yet.
He's learning, though.
Kelvin gave his sister his customary light kick.
I too had a sibling once round here. And whether this be your blood sibling or your friend sibling, I know what prompted that kick.
Blood sibling. Our father was a round here. Our mother a point here. So the chances were even, and that's the way it happened. One of each. Then our father was killed, and our mother remarried.
Who was your father?
He called himself John Knight. He was from Earth.
I know him.
You do?
That is to say, I heard of him. That was all.
But by the way his jaw tightened, Kelvin realized that the man knew more than he was telling. Was it something bad? It couldn't be. Yet...
About our business.
Yeah. The business will be concluded satisfactorily. I know my trade, Crumb.
More, Crumb.
More.
Yes, I'm sure you do. If it's agreed, then, 2,000 men and at least 30 good officers. With your men and our men, when our men get trained...
It will be a battle. That queen of yours, I'm not sure we've gotten the edge. We could take them in regular combat, but they've got a magician that's as slippery as a greased eel shark, and twice as mean. So don't be thinking this is any pushover.
We have a secret weapon.
Yeah? Where?
I can't tell you that in front of your men.
You aren't bluffing?
No.
Then tell me when you're ready. If it's enough to make up for the edge their magic gives them.
It may be.
Then I trust we'll have a satisfactory outcome. I'll have the men and supplies ready in half a day. Come back here and we'll all ride together for Rudd.
Agreed.
And why don't you take these young folks sightseeing? Take them to see the floor.
I had it in mind. Come, knights.
They trooped out. Kelvin, however, felt less than satisfactory.
We haven't tried using Helm for spying yet. It may not work.
Then again, it may. If we can spy out their plans ahead of time, we can lick them every time. I'd call that a good edge.
Still...
It will be all right, Kel. Those berries didn't hurt me before, and now we have plenty of them. I'm sure I can do what needs to be done.
Kelvin was silent, still not liking the risk either to her or to their effort if this ploy failed. But again, he seemed to be fated to participate in things he didn't like or trust again and again. Was this a hero's lot?
The floor? It's near here?
Very near.
It's just a big old crack without a bottom. Who wants to see that?
You do. And so does your brother. Believe me, it's something you're never going to forget.
John snapped a rock from her sling into a tall oapo tree, disturbing a squirbit who was packing off a sugary nut high amid the branches. It was a for-fun shot, Kelvin knew, and not one that John intended to score.
Schoolmaster used to tell us that when he brought out the strap. And you know, he was right. I never forgot. But maybe you're right. Maybe a dumb old hole in the ground is worth seeing.
It's behind that high board fence over there. It's got slits you can see through. You can poke an arm and your head through if you've a mind to, but there's no sense in that. I've heard of women who've been jilted by soldiers dropping their engagement rings down there. Waste of good metal and precious stones.
In a moment, they were at the barrier, some distance from others who had come to see the flaw. Like the others, they approached the nearest openings in the fence. The sawn-out viewing place was chest high on Morvin and Les, head high on Kelvin, and chin high on John. Helm was just the right height for it. Hesitantly, and just a bit fearfully on Kelvin's part, they looked. Down. Down at twinkling stars set amid velvety blackness. Now and then a bright object such as was seen in the night streaked through the black, trailing a long tail, a luminous tadpole in a fruit pond of space. Kelvin shifted his feet, half fearful that the solid ground would disappear beneath them. Then he looked over at open-mouthed John and Helm and the big eyes of More and Less.
The metaphysicians say it's a tear or rip in the physical universe. It's said that two universes, two realities, are here joined, that one bleeds or oozes into the other.
And sometimes something or someone manages to cross, like my mother.
Or my father.
If the mood touched John, she flung it off.
I'm going to get a star.
The rock flew over the barrier and plummeted. A quick flash, and it was gone.
Didn't lead enough.
Again, the flash in the adjoining star field.
You really think you'll hit a star?
I will if I keep trying.
Not a star, John. They're too big and too distant. You haven't a chance.
You sound like a schoolmaster.
I might have been.
Then, giving Kelvin a nudge, Les pointed to two dark-haired tourist girls a short distance away.
Well, I bet those two are from the Kingdom of Eretex. Let's go talk to them.
Helen's hand clamped firmly on Kelvin's hand. She didn't say a word, but he received the message.
Some other time, maybe.
Maybe never, eh, son?
But Kelvin didn't reply. He was too conscious of Helen's hand on his. He would be satisfied, he realized, if she never released it. But he couldn't say so. Maybe this was another flaw in his character, one that faintly echoed the amazing flaw they had just experienced.
Now, I want...
Morven Crumb leaned over Kelvin at the writing table.
For this to be just right. Read what you've written.
Kelvin looked at John and Lester and the dozen or so knights crowded around their outdoor table.
To Her Imperial Majesty, Queen Zoanna of Rudd. Your Majesty, whereas you have seized power without popular mandate, and whereas your rule has become oppressive in the extreme, I, Kelvin Knight Hackleberry of Rudd, the Round Ear of Prophecy, call upon you to abdicate the throne and restore it to your rightful consort, King Rufert, should he live, or someone of the people's choice, should Rufert be presently slain or incapacitated beyond his ability to rule. You have 7 days from the receipt of this message to announce your abdication. Should you not abdicate within that time, the Knights of the Round Ear shall attack with all their magic-supported strength and fury, seize the Imperial Palace, and force your abdication, if need be, by sword point.
Seems right, but...
It should be more insulting. Say, perhaps, Your Imperial Majesty, Usurper, Hag, and Meanie.
Perhaps Usurper might fit.
But we want her to agree.
Quite right. She won't, of course, but... Oh, hang it. Hackleberry, just write, In the name of freedom, I am.
In the name of freedom, I am.
There, hold it. You got the wax ready, Les?
I have, Father.
Then affix his signature.
Lester leaned over and deposited a drop of wax on the paper.
No, not there, you idiot. Quick, scrape that off.
Lester scraped, using a knife blade. The wax came off cleanly.
There, above where the wax was, write Kelvin Hackleberry, Round Ear of Prophecy.
Kelvin did so, feeling uncomfortable about the prophecy part.
Now, date it. Anybody got the date?
It's June 21st of 2024.
Kelvin marked the date.
Now, fold in past the middle and overlap the edge. Now, Lester, your wax.
Lester dripped wax in a round, big circle. The wax made a small puddle across the overlapping edges.
Now, Hackleberry, your ear.
You want me to...
Just do it, Hackleberry.
Kelvin turned his head sideways and pressed his right ear in the wax.
My, that looks like fun.
Hold it. Has to set. All right, now, up carefully.
Kelvin raised his head. He looked at the paper. The impression was that of a round ear, more or less. That had been Morven's idea, as had almost everything. It touched his ear. How smooth it now felt. He glanced around the landscape to the cabin where Helen was fixing food. He wished he could go feel her round and smooth ears, not to mention her round and smooth...
Messenger!
One of the knights was almost instantly at his shoulder. Kelvin recognized him as one whose farm had been burned. Morvan put the document in a message tube and kept it.
Deliver this to the Imperial Palace. Just call out a message for the Queen and toss it to the gateman, then ride out, fast.
Aye, sir. I'm on my way.
We have to get more discipline. Now, about these posters and handbills.
All afternoon they were putting them up. They would ride to the edge of a village, find a likely tree, and while one of them kept a lookout for the Queen's minions, the other nailed poster to tree. All the posters read the same, and by now Kelvin, if not John, was thoroughly sick of them. Each poster said,
Attention! A new day is coming, and those who would help bring it about are invited to join with us in our demand that Queen Zoanna abdicate. Sign the petition and deposit it with your local representative knight. He will tell you how you can help further by resisting oppression locally or by joining our ranks. We are all free people and will not long continue to suffer tyranny. Right and prophecy is on our side. Signed, Knights of the Round Ear.
Kelvin nailed up another one. He was growing so tired. No one had told him that revolution would have so much tedious labor. The distribution of posters was hard work that soon became a bore. After the posters came the handbills, freely thrown from horses and placed also in many reaching hands.
People of Rudd, should the Queen not abdicate her position by the end of this week, we are at war. To join the right side, the winning side, see your local recruiter. Give any snooping soldier a short shrift or the long shaft as appropriate. Join now, today, while you still can. Knights of the Round Ear.
Ugh, some job for a hero.
Kelvin tossed the last of the flyers to a boy he almost recognized. And now back home to the tent, and then another day of doing Crumb's bidding.
Are you sure it's safe? We've tested those berries on animals, and you know every one of them died. I can't see that the shape of the ear should make that much of a difference.
It's not just the shape of the ear. It's the earthly ancestry. Those of us with round ears must be breeding true to our heritage, so are not affected the same way as the natives are. Anyway, I survived it before.
Could be a fluke.
I'll just take one berry this time. If I make it to astral separation, I'll do something simple like...
I don't trust this either. To gamble on poison...
Like visiting my folks, and yours, to be sure they're all right.
Kelvin's protests dried up. Of course he wanted to know that his folks were all right. So, reluctantly, he acceded to the experiment. After all, they did need to know whether it worked reliably. Helen solemnly consumed a single berry from the hoard they had harvested from the dragon's garden. Again, Kelvin wondered why a dragon should have tended it so carefully. Of course, the ability to separate astrally could be an immense advantage, but were dragons smart enough to realize that? Or did they simply like the feeling of astral travel? Maybe that was it. They did for recreation what they could have done for phenomenal power over their environment, because they were stupid creatures. A man would never be that foolish. Or would he? Kelvin thought about some of the people he knew and remained disquieted. Helen sank into sleep. Then she stopped breathing.
She's dying!
No, don't touch her. She was like that before. It's the astral separation.
But she's not even...
That's the way it is. She looks dead, but she's not. Quite. When a spirit returns, she'll recover. I'm sure. I think.
After an hour, there was a tremor at Helen's breast. She was recovering. Soon she would be able to talk.
I did it! I traveled to my folks, and they're all right. Then to yours, and they're all right. Only
they need gold to cover the taxes.
No, they aren't being bothered about that. But I saw guardsmen camped around their farm, not doing anything, just watching. What does that mean?
It means confirmation, just as I suspected. Your folks and their farm are a trap for you, Kelvin. They're waiting for you to visit home. Then they'll nab you. That's why I didn't want you to go, not even to take them money they might need. The Queen's guards won't bother your folks as long as they remain... Ah, but you can't go back there.
Kelvin felt weak in the knees. The big man had been right all along, saving him from a horrendous mistake.
I didn't know how much time I had, so I looked around and I found I could orient on people who were thinking of you, Kelvin. There were a lot of them, all friendly, but one was very unfriendly. So I went to that one, and it was Zatanas.
Zatanas, the Queen's evil sorcerer!
Yes, he was talking with the dwarf, the one who bought John.
Now, what did he say?
Something about how he had brought the round ears here.
He did it?
And something about lizards. Then my time ended and my spirit was hauled back to my body. I'm sorry I couldn't have stayed longer. Maybe I should have eaten two berries.
Then, exhausted, she slept again. But this time her breathing did not stop. It seemed to Kelvin that one berry had been quite risky enough. Probably the new ones were more potent than the ones John had carried around squashed in her pocket and then soaked in her mouth. Three full-strength dragonberries might very well have killed Helen.
That was a message we didn't expect. Why should Zatanas make a claim like that about bringing the round ears here?
And what does he want with lizards?
It's beyond me. I only hope we don't find out the hard way.
The laboratory where Zatanas performed his miracles was a veritable rat's nest of stacked cauldrons, rolled-up pentagrams and other magical charts, old books of spells and sciences and other traditional tools of the trade. The place smelled of 1,000 herbs intermixed with the scent of burned incense and charred bones. In the center of the room, an owl hawk perched on a human skull held upright by a dagger stuck in the remaining neck vertebrae. Another skull had been sawn lengthwise, one half serving as an incense burner, the other as a receptacle for some vile-smelling unguent. Light streamed in from the high windows, and yet the place was dark, as though the interior drank the light or forbade its passage. Zatanas, dark of visage, long of face and nose and claw, sat at a table and munched the simple repast that Quito, his dwarf, had set out for him. Unlike Quito, he still sometimes ate when the physical act of eating pleased him, as it did now. The meat tasted like dragon, though actually it was Exeglator, a particularly ugly lizard with a green skin that, in the right light, shone like the scales of a dragon.
A little less strong and a little more rancid.
What, Master?
Zatanas reached for the flagon of good orange wine on his table. The wine was specially spiced, as was most of the magician's fare. A little dried blood from the right sources added greatly to taste.
I said that the meat is aged to perfection. A little less aging and it would be tough. A little more and it would be leather.
Thank you, Master.
Quito frequently responded like that, no matter what Zatanas said. That was one of his more endearing traits, and made it slightly harder to punish him properly when he erred. Zatanas had been furious at Quito's recent loss of his purchase at the Girl Mart, but had elected, for the time being, to withhold action. When Quito began to think of becoming impudent, then Zatanas would punish him for that error, restoring appropriate equilibrium to their relationship. The dwarf, knowing this, was, meanwhile, being extremely well-behaved, as servile as he had ever been. That was good. However, this matter of the abduction of the girl could not remain unattended. He would have to locate the culprits and deal with them in a manner that would discourage any repetitions. That meant that simple extinction was not enough. Their deaths had to be public and horrible beyond any reasonable expectation. He knew their identities, of course. That wasn't the problem. The problem was bringing them down in precisely the right manner, an object lesson for all time and all the land. First, however, he had to get hold of them. As long as they remained hidden in the wilderness, moving constantly about, he was unable to pin them down. So Zatanas watched and waited, unwilling to act until he could accomplish his full purpose in his own exacting way. He had patience. His ire, once incited, never cooled. Sooner or later, the stupid round-eared boy would seek to visit his home farm and walk into the trap, and the idiotic would-be revolutionist Crumb would try to rescue him, and then it might begin. Meanwhile, he had a rebellion to quell. He trusted that Crumb would not risk either himself or the round-eared boy in a direct conflict. That was important, because he didn't want anything to happen to either prematurely. It wouldn't make much of an impression if they both died coincidentally in battle.
I have decided to hold a conference with my daughter, the Queen.
Will I attend, Master?
No, she doesn't wish for you to be in her sight.
Why, Master?
Because you frighten her. She still thinks you're a demon from another world. I don't see any reason to enlighten her, do you?
Quito grinned more broadly than ever. He, as Zatanas well knew, liked being feared by royalty. In fact, he liked being feared by anyone.
You tell her about the lizards, Master?
Just what do you think you know about the lizards?
That they are little brothers to the dragons, Master.
Right. Most fortunately.
Zatanas rose and crossed the dimly lit room to the work table. On it he had set up and molded hills and valleys of clay and dirt and sand. It was a perfect miniature landscape of the terrain for leagues about the castle. A carved palace occupied the same position in the miniature landscape as the castle they were in did the real landscape. There were miniature houses and even a miniature river that had to be continuously fed from a small spigot and a bucket behind the scene of distant hills and houses. All in order, a work of incredible delicacy that had taken many pains and much time.
You see, Quito, bringing round ears to this world was a mistake on my part.
You, Master?
Yes. A possibly serious mistake. You might call it a grotesque flaw. I reckoned not with Muvar and the force of his prophecies. But no matter. It's a mistake that my daughter and I will soon rectify.
With lizards, Master?
With dragons, small friend. In this very place.
You and the Queen, your daughter, here?
She out there. You and I in here. Quito, little brother, remember what I told you about the magic that can be performed with miniatures?
Yes, Master. The doll that looks like an enemy and that you break so that the enemy breaks.
Exactly. Well, here we have a small copy of the land and the palace and the houses and the river. Over there...
Zatanas pointed at the lush growth of transplanted shrubs forming a forest.
Is where, in our actuality, is Dragon Country. If little brothers emerge from here, they will appear to us to be the size of real dragons in relation to the palace and the farms.
I understand, Master.
Do you? Well, watch.
Taking a lizard from a cage, Zatanas set it among the plants. He then took a clay figure molded to look like a mounted knight with tiny sword and placed it in an open field. From a jar, he took a bit of honey on a knife blade and applied it to the figure. He stood back, and soon a large fly was buzzing at the honey.
Now!
Zatanas dropped a pinch of herbal powder on the lizard. The lizard raised its dragon head, sniffing. Its green scales seemed to flash gold. It raised its small hood. Suddenly, it was running full tilt, wriggling from side to side. The lizard reached the knight, pulled it down, and licked it with its long tongue. The fly disappeared down the creature's throat.
Now, what do you suppose the real knight will look like when a real dragon steps on him?
Gooey. Blood making a crimson puddle, bones all white, broken, brains a pulpy pink mess.
Exactly. And that's why I am going to hold a conference with the Queen. Her spies will locate the enemy, and there's where I'll have a dragon. Or several dragons. And that is how dragons doing my magical bidding will win the war.
Quito's exclamation of servile appreciation of genius seemed almost genuine. The knights and the queen's guardsmen were met in battle. Dust rose in clouds beneath the horses' hooves and obscured everything that wasn't happening over a horse's length away. Kelvin had trained for days to try to use his gauntleted left hand with his sword, but it was all but hopeless. In order to stay mounted, he needed at least his right hand on the reins, and the left, even with practice, could hardly counter a sword swung with a good right arm. Except, he discovered, under actual battle conditions. Then, as in previous encounters, the gauntlet knew the threat and countered sword blows darting in to stab or disarm attackers. There was blood on the sword and the gauntlet, and Kelvin didn't want to look at either. Fortunately, it made little difference. When a guardsman was close, the gauntlet knew before Kelvin did.
Guardsman, you're a fighter, Hackleberry. Reminds me of when I was your age.
Kelvin wondered what it would do to his image if he vomited again. Taking lives, even the lives of evil men who wanted to kill him, just wasn't the way it was presented in storybooks. At least, not for him. He was appalled by this whole business.
Just got me another, Dad! Makes three!
Four for me! The lad here polished off half a dozen, without, I think, a sweat!
Kelvin wondered whether Moore was being kind. Kelvin was sure he was bathed in cold sweat. If he had to think about more than guiding the horse and ducking an occasional blow, he would soon be exhausted. His left arm was beginning to ache. Without the gauntlet, he would have been finished long before.
But this whole pass looks like one big rolling cloud.
Reminded of the dust, Kelvin tasted it. He spat and the spittle didn't quite clear his chin. His left hand tingled and he knew another enemy approached.
Gods! There's something... Gods!
Kelvin's blade met an enemy's, deflected it, and lunged, nearly unseating Kelvin. He saw the guardsman, no older than himself, give him a stricken look, then drop his sword, slump forward, and slide from the saddle under their horse's feet.
Seven?
Gods! Oh, gods!
Kelvin knew that it was little of his own doing. This had been happening all along.
Kel! Kel, wait!
Kelvin's head snapped around. It couldn't be, but it was. Coming full tilt down the hill, Mockery, and on his back...
John! John! Over here!
Guardsmen started for the girl. Three of them. Kelvin needed no gauntlet to push his steed into motion. He kneed the horse, turned its head, was yanked down by the gauntlet, and thereby ducked to blow from his right. His horse made a leap over a crawling guardsman and a wounded knight, and detoured around others not identified. Kelvin yanked the reins, bringing it back on course. Then he was there on the hillside, and his sword was flashing, and his reins lifted with his buckler as a blow almost took him across the face. It was amazing, the precision with which that gauntlet yanked him about just so that every move was right. A knight on a black stallion flashed to his right, and then that knight was confronting his attacker on his right hand as Kelvin lurched, pulled about yet again by the gauntlet, and his wildly flailing sword dealt with the man to his left.
Watch out, Kel!
John's warning saved him just in time. He ducked. Even as his left arm unsheathed the sword from its gory grip in the throat of a third foe and swung around to counter and disarm this fourth. But the fourth attacker was no fool. He whirled his horse and fled.
John, you idiot! Why did you come here?
Helm remembered!
What's this?
She remembered about the lizard from when she saw Satanas. I had to come warn you.
What about the lizards?
They're dragons!
What?
And I saw them because I knew to look. The dragons!
You saw dragons?
Three of them. Big brutes. Come in here.
What? I don't understand.
Sympathetic magic. Lizards are like miniature dragons. That evil sorcerer must have enchanted dragons by working through lizards.
I could see them from above, coming up the pass.
Are you sure?
I saw them, just as Helm said. Three lizards. Because Atanas didn't think you'd be fool enough to go into battle yourself.
Does that make any sense?
It must, in some twisted way. Gods, nothing can face three dragons.
That's why Helm was so worried. She's been trying to remember all these days, and just couldn't. And then she saw a lizard, and it clicked. So she told me, and I...
You did right. If those monsters catch us,
we better retreat fast.
Son, I think you're right. Kelvin, you get that horn to your lips and you blow the way I told you you never would.
Shaking in spite of himself, Kelvin lifted the polished ox horn Morven Crumb had hung about his neck. Blowing it made his head swim. So did the heat, so did the action he had just seen.
Come on now, uphill and fast! Dragons don't like heights, everyone knows that!
Kelvin hadn't known that, however. Still, it probably made sense. Flying creatures liked heights, and the local dragons were landbound. They turned their mounts uphill, Donkey and John just ahead of them. Looking back, Kelvin saw other knights, some of them barely holding on to their horses, coming at a gallop.
We were beating them! Why did you sound retreat? Now we're in disarray, and soon they'll regroup and come after us and destroy us on the run!
Maybe, maybe not. We got word there's...
And there it was. A dragon riding out of the dust with a man in its mouth. Then another dragon, and another shimmering gold and deadly.
Run for your lives!
They ran, all of them, including the donkey. Now no one questioned the wisdom of their sudden disengagement from the fray. Panting, standing at the top of the steep hill and looking down into the pass where the dust roiled and men and horses were being slain and rapidly devoured, the knights knew they had made their escape just in time. The pursuing guardsmen hadn't been that fortunate, for the dragons had come up behind them.
The girl saved us. That division of the Queen's guardsmen, they'll never be the same.
But if Zatanna sent the dragons, wouldn't he have known that his own side would be in the way? Why would he do that?
Something doesn't add up. We'd better get right back, and your girl will have to eat another berry. We'd better spy on the evil magician and find out what he's really up to.